If you're someone who's been told you weren't good enough, not big enough, not fast enough, not smart enough, or if you've ever felt paralyzed by a failure you just weren't willing to accept, this is the show for you. Hustle and Motivate is a blueprint built by guests who've overcome obstacles, silenced critics, and overcome adversity by seeing every failure as an opportunity, realizing the true power of the underdog mentality. This is Tyler O'Shea, and you're listening to Hustle and Motivate. Welcome back to the show. Today's guest is a scrappy entrepreneur who started out selling all sorts of stuff in middle school, from Star Wars cards to song lyrics. Yep, song lyrics. This was before everyone had a computer in their pockets. Today, he's the CEO of Fantasy Couch, a booming fantasy football brand with over 100,000 loyal followers. Here is Hussein the Brain Aksu. What were you like growing up? Like, when did you decide you wanted to become an entrepreneur?
It's always been in my blood, and you got to go through the journey of like self-realization, what you really like, what you really love, what your DNA really is. You can't be something you're not. So, a lot of this I discovered more recently than not, but it started at a young age, like age 13, selling Magic the Gathering cards to other fellow nerds that were more nerdy than me. And then there was like a small little theme. They always come out with little cards like Pokemon. I didn't sell that, but I sold Star Wars. It was a popular game for like exactly 1 year. Same as like Pokemon and Star Wars. So I sold those. I sold lyrics to famous rap songs and other famous songs. Right, I printed them out and sold them. Yeah, I mean, this is I'm 34 years old, so this was like in middle school. Not a lot of people had internet.
Yeah.
Especially where I grew up, it wasn't like, it was not a rich place. So, I sold lyrics to songs, whatever. Like, it was kind of cool then. I know it's weird now, anything you can get, but I always had that spirit. I always wanted to be different, and I also made songs and stuff. So, like, it was around that age, 12 years old, when I knew, like, that was my real DNA. And I started messing with a lot of video stuff, to videos, GIFs, multimedia at an even younger age, when I was 11.
What were you doing before you started Fantasy Couch? Like, just for people listening at home, did you have any type of idea that's what you wanted to go for? Or were you just kind of messing around trying to make money? And
I guess my first real love was music. That's like was my main goal. Like, that's what I wanted to be entrepreneur in. So that was like my early story, what I just said. And then I made a rap group and I started rapping and making beats. A lot of people making fun of me. I had a lot of support too, but a lot of people made fun of me. Oh, that's whack. That's whack. Yeah. You suck. You're a joke. Whatever typical stuff.
And how'd you handle that?
Well, it was like it turned into that helped me, because you either go two ways. You either be the loser, or you be the winner, or you lose in this and then you win in the next niche, the next thing. Mm-hmm. And maybe it might take you 7-9 things until you find the place where you can win. And I ended up winning in music, but nothing is all these trendy words and all these big things is not always as it seems. So in music, I accomplished all the goals I set out for, but I didn't make the $1 million. I didn't get on XXL magazine or whatever the, like fill in the blank, whatever you think the glory thing is with music. It's almost never that. Music industry is the worst industry to get into. And not to be negative for the people that love music and want to do it. If you want to do it as a hobby, you want to do it as a passion, do it. Go forth. That's totally there for you. And you can even make a little bit of money. You can even do stuff. I'm just telling you what facts are. And it's the worst industry to get into as far as, you're going to make money or do this. So I set out my goals. I wanted to work with Mac Dre. I wanted to work with platinum artists. I wanted to do this and that. And for a year, about 1 year, it was pretty much a full-time job. Like, I actually made enough money to live off of it, but that spanned only 1 year, you know, grinding so much to get to that point. And then after falling off, like, it was just, I just hated the industry. It was so crazy, man. And like, I have this friend, he's a talented rapper, and like, every time he makes money, like, he made $400 in a week and from shows or whatnot, and his manager stole it from him. Like, this story happens all the time, over and over, on loop. Like, people steal from you. It's just, it's so frustrating working in that industry. And you can make it, but it's the toughest industry to make it in.
So how old were you when you were working in music?
I got more serious at 15. That's when we started to groove, started rapping and stuff. And, you know, I went to kind of a ghetto, grew up in a kind of ghetto city. I love it. A lot of personality, Vallejo, California. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of people that talk trash in a situation like that, you know, like, they let you know what's up. It's a lot of people are stuck in that negative mind space. So I liked it at the same time, like, 'cause it's funny. It's amazing. It's personality. And a lot of personality rubs up on me, makes me more unique, less vanilla, you know, less cookie cutter. But at the same time, it's more rough. Like I said, they let you know what's up. And it's hard to make it, you know, like, people have that mindset. So
crabs in a bucket, they're trying to pull you down, right?
Yeah, that too. So it's like, there's a good and a bad to it. And that's what I want you and the listeners to take from this. I'm really not ragging on it. Like, I'm just telling you how it is. Mm-hmm. And I work with a platinum artist. I work with Mike Marshall, you know, who recently, he just got the bag, man, from that. Mike Marshall's the guy who sung the hook for I Got Five on It. Crazy story here. So I work with him, and I did with him, I made some beats for him and stuff. But the main thing I worked with him was this song that we did a music video on. And I did music videos for a while. That's what I transitioned. So I transitioned more from producing and rapping to music video directing and editing. And I did a music video for him with my buddy TY, and the song was amazing. It was basically autobiography song. It's crazy how a lot of people don't do that. So autobiography, but in the form of a song. And that's what we're filming the music video to. And in that, and of course, we talked to him during the shoots, you know, like, so you can imagine music videos take a while to shoot and edit. Mm-hmm. So he's telling us the story, and it's in the song, is he didn't even get paid from that song. Arguably one of the most iconic hip hop songs ever. I Got Five on It. Yeah. And then, you know, the music, the video, the movie that just came out, Us, this is Jordan, whatever it's called. I saw it in the movies. You know, Peele did a follow up to his Get Out movie.
Yeah.
And did you watch the movie?
No, I haven't seen it. I saw the trailer with the music in it.
For sure. Yeah. So the music, it's like the main theme to the movie. Yeah. And he finally got paid from NBC Studios, got a check. Wow. And it's been 24 years. And don't like people taking what I'm saying the wrong way. It's not a sob story. It's not saying the music industry sucks. It's saying facts. Sure, a lot of that probably will fall on him because he wasn't a good businessman. But he's an excellent artist, though. He's a very talented singer. He's, when it comes to music, this man, and I work with a lot of people, he's amazing. So, yes, some falls on him, but some also, you know, it's got to fall on the dude who stole the money from him and swindled him. It's just not fair. It's not right. So even if you make the most iconic song, one of the most iconic songs ever, guys, it's not as, you know, what's the word? Flowers and what is the, you know, like something that's
peaches, sunshines and rainbows. So,
there you go. That's what it's not all sunshines and rainbows as people seem. It's not as cool. Sure, there's going to be a handful of people that really crush it. You know, like 50 Cent back in his day, when he was in his prime and he fell off. But that's why a lot of artists and rappers branch out to do other stuff, because the music industry sucks. That's why you'd rather be an actor or start a brand or do vitamin water like he did.
Definitely. So when did the Fantasy Couch idea come about, and how did that whole thing develop?
So after music industry, like, it, you know, I was still doing that, and I was always an entrepreneur, as in, like, I was doing freelancing. So my main gig was like, and it always changed exactly what it is, but it was basically, you know, one of the latest things I did was wedding videos, always did websites, always did, you know, music, beats for people, made a few bucks off each beat. You know, just anything graphic design, anything multimedia, social media, I was doing. And that's how I was making a living. And a lot of it was cool. I didn't like working with the customers, though. So what I was doing is I was going to Sac State, University of Sacramento. And my business major was I was a business major. And I just picked that because I thought people would, you know, like that's kind of like the thing to pick. I don't know what to pick.
Yeah.
A lot of kids at that age, 18, don't really know what to pick either, 17 sometimes. So business major. And I didn't really like it. And also I was like unlucky. Like I got teachers, like I couldn't even understand what they were saying. Their accent was so thick. And like, it just unlucky, but lucky in the big scheme. So like, it was just not going well for me being a business major. And my boy was like, oh, I changed my major from business to digital video, which is just another word for film school. And I was like, man, that's kind of a, I don't know, it kind of sounds dumb, but then I changed my major to that, and it wasn't like a coincidence. It was always in my blood. Like, my dad had he got a video camera from his cop buddy. You know how the cops get stuff from, like, they seize it?
Yeah.
So, like, some of the stuff I had was, like, seized from this cop, and one was a VHS video camera. I always would play with it. Then in high school, like, my last year, so I took, like, photography and whatnot. And then my last year, I was like, oh, I'll pick, you know, you could pick any elective. I already have, like, I'm already, like, you know, doing, like, I don't need to take class, but I'll pick video editing. And then in there, they introduced me. So I got to tell the whole story to really grasp it. Cool. So video editing, they took, I took that, and then there was a club. You know how they have school clubs, and then I joined a club where you competed in video, won first place in my region, made it to state, and I lost in that, you know. But it also added a chip to my shoulder because we're from the poorest high school, and we're competing against people with Mac computers and digital video cameras. And we in that school, we had a VHS camera, and we're editing on this software to where if you select the wrong setting, the whole thing will crash because it gets too slow. Cause I was like, you know, it just like, it just added that chip to my shoulder, but I didn't know at the time. And it, that allowed me to be more resourceful, you know, like you don't, and this is, you know, YouTube wasn't invented yet. This is what YouTube was invented for. You don't need a $75,000 budget, which is like what they started to make the movie Evil Dead, which is like nothing.
Yeah.
You don't even need that nowadays. All you need is, you just don't even need any money really. Like, as far as standards in America go, like, you can be poor and just invest enough money to have something to film, and you could be successful on YouTube. So anyway, I'm at Sac State. I'm close to graduating, and a position opens up. My buddy T.Y., who helped me, you know, who I was partners with filming that Mike Marshall video, and we filmed other videos. He's like, you should join. He's a graphic designer at the school newspaper. He said, hey, the video editor is graduating, spots opening up, you should do it. I said, that's stupid. I'm not going to do it. He asked me again. I said, okay, I'm going to do it. So even though I'm kind of a hater and brushing off ideas at first, at least I decided to make that decision the second time around.
Yeah.
So you got to jump on opportunities, but I'm also skeptical because I've been hurt a lot in the past. I've been swindled a lot. You know, I had to build that layer, that wall from where I grew up, because a lot of people will try to take advantage of you. Mm-hmm. Where I grew up, it's a lot of people who smile and are excellent actors, man. They could win Oscars. They act so much, but they're just con men. And that happened every day in the city I grew up in. So I have built this wall up, but I got to also, you know, you got to also take these opportunities that arise, like this small one right here. I didn't even know that the school paper, the university I went to was okay. It wasn't bad, and but it wasn't great, you know, like it wasn't like UC Berkeley, which is not too far from me. That's, you know, that's known across the world. But fortunately, the school paper I worked for was one of the best college papers in the world, in the nation, in the U.S. Wow. So it was always top 30. And we even won first place in online one year. So I was very fortunate enough to learn about sports journalism. And because it was such a new thing, this was like when – this was around – just to give a time reference, this was when the first iPhone was in, around the time the first iPhone came out. So the iPhone 1. It came out and print was starting to die. People were still reading newspapers, but it was starting to die and shifting more towards online. So I had full reign. There wasn't really any like thing specific to do in my position, like video editor, you know, and we just started getting online like 2, 3, 4 years ago. So I was like I told my buddy, like my buddy Mike, who's a good friend of mine in college, I was like, hey, they give me pretty much full reign. Like, we can do whatever we want. He's like, let's do a fantasy football show. And so we love fantasy football. And so we did a show called Fantasy Fix. We put the green screen up. We did a lot of comedy with it. It was fun. It got a lot. And then we put it on YouTube. And so we did that for the Hornet. That was the name of the school newspaper. Then comes time we're graduating. And he's like, dude, we could just, you know, this. So that's over, you know. And we're like, dude, we can just keep doing this. Let's start our own website. So one thing you do as an entrepreneur, this is like, it's a little like side note. I think this is a good thing. Like, this is what I know. Maybe there's a better way. This is what I always do. I rank a top 10 list on what I want my name to be. So to come up with, I tell people, come up with at least 7 names, preferably closer to 12. So about top 10, and rank them on how much you want them. So first was Fantasy Gear. And the number 3, I think, was Fantasy Couch. And then, and then you look at the domains, and we looked at the Twitter, you know, saw what names were available. And Fantasy Gear was taken by some idiot who's like, I want to do this and that with Fantasy Gear. It's still not up to this day, but thank God he owned that domain and didn't want to sell it for under $10,000. And we had only about $100 startup money. So we went with Fantasy Couch, and thank God we did, because Fantasy Gear sounds way worse than Fantasy Couch. Like, Fantasy Couch kind of sounds like an adult themed website. It's not, guys, it's Fantasy Sword. But Fantasy Gear sounds even worse than that. Sounds like we're selling a bunch of like black leather and all this crazy stuff. So, you know, luck, whatever you want to call it, that's why we went with Fantasy Couch, and we started that. And that year was 2009 when we started Fantasy Couch.
So what were those early days like? Like, how'd you guys get off the ground?
So it was bad. I mean, it started off kind of cool, because 2008, when we're doing Fantasy Fix, nobody was on YouTube doing fantasy football videos.
Yeah.
About 3 people, maybe. It was like, it's no competition. So even though we're doing stuff that was like, it was good, not great, like, it was getting views. And then Fantasy Couch, we had some cool opportunities like Twitter and this and that, where we always attacked anything that came out. We always first on it. So day one, we won a Facebook page, a MySpace page, and Twitter. And no fantasy football brand was on Twitter. And we honestly didn't know what we would do on Twitter. We just knew we opened it. Same thing when Instagram first came out. And I heard Instagram through one of Tyreek Evans' friends, a rookie of the year. He told me, like, hey, man, Kevin Durant, all these guys are on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Durant was like, this was like his second year. Like, he was like still super young. He was maybe 20 years old, 21. And first fantasy football account on Instagram too. So you just always hopped on it, and it was okay, but kind of rough. So I'm going to fast forward a little bit. So a few years later, we're doing okay, but not really making money off of it. The revenue we made was peanuts, and we were basically spending that on promotion or
where was the revenue coming from? Just ads or?
Yeah, like stupid stuff, man. Like ads, promotions, YouTube ad revenue, you know?
Yeah.
Like when they give you for the ads. It's so little. It's about $1 every 1,000 views. It's just a super rough estimate. So basically, yeah, even if you make 1 million views off a video, I think that's $10,000. And almost nobody gets 1 million views off one video. Mm-hmm. So we group text here, everybody that's involved. So we got like a basketball editor. We got another couple football writers, a couple baseball, a couple football. So group text. Hey, guys, it's been fun. It's been great. You know, this is amazing. You know, like, this was just awesome. But this is our real final year. Like, this is a no, because we kind of sent texts like this before, but this was the real one. And we knew it. You know, like when you know something, like no matter what word you say, you know when it's coming to an end. This was it. Like, we're just like, it's just not going to happen. Like, we're old now. We're getting in our 30s, and this is just, you know, it's time to stop with this childish stuff. So one last year, guys, I think it's 2015, around that time. If it doesn't work this year, I think it's going to come to an end, guys. That's it. And it was like, it's been fun. So we've been doing this for a while. So this was it. Okay. Mayweather versus Pacquiao is coming up. You watched that fight, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mayweather Pacquiao is coming up. We always did my buddy Mike, who's the co-founder. It's me and Mike all the way, right? We have a few other guys, but it's always me and Mike. He was the host from day. So this, I forgot one important part of the story. So Mike was the host back in the college days. I was always behind the scenes, you know, even with music, behind the scenes, music producer. You know, I rap sometimes, but really behind the scenes. Behind the scenes, fantasy couch, you know, director, editor, producer. And he moved away, so I had to be the host, and it sucked. I was horrible at it. So it's been a little bit depressing. You know when you're doing something and it's just not good, and you finally realize it's not good after years, and it's just kind of – it's not a good feeling, man. So anyway, we've been doing – and he looks a little bit like Tiger Woods, and he's Filipino. He does a great Manny Pacquiao impression. So, and he's also, Tiger Woods looks a little bit like Russell Wilson too. So he also does Russell Wilson impressions and he kills it too. Like we work really hard on him. So Manny Pacquiao Mayweather's coming up. If we're ever going to do another Manny Pacquiao parody, it's now. It's the freaking Mayweather fight. This is the fight of the decade. Like we got to do it. And I know people are like, oh, that fight sucked that now. But okay, put your mind state before the fight. Okay. This is like so big. They're like, this is the time to do it. And we've learned a lot of tricks along the way. So what we did, this is one way, guys, to make a viral video. There's a lot of ways. And I could go into viral videos, how they're not all that good. But it was good for us. And not the way that people think, but it was good. So this is one way to make a viral video, guys. And I'll give another example too. So when an event's about to happen, you film it ahead of time. So 2 weeks before Mayweather fought Pacquiao, he came over. You know, it's the same motions. We're like, okay, let's iron out the green screen. Let's get the wrinkles out the green screen. Okay, Mike, put on this black Justin Bieber wig that you always put on. You know, he's in the bathroom putting on the magic marker on his, making a fake goatee, you know, practicing his accent, you know, because this is putting on his shoes and the jacket. Like he's ready to, you know, the shorts, like he's ready to go. But the mood is still like, we're going through the motions. You know, like you got to imagine before a shoot like this, you should be all, you know, it should be fun. Like it's a hilarious video. And, you know, he's doing this and that. And we start filming it and we starting to have a little bit of fun now. He's got the gloves on. We take out the Hennessy bottle, not to drink, but, you know, because Pacquiao is sponsored by Hennessy. Hennessy and Nike were his big sponsors. So we're just having fun. And this man, like, you got to watch this video. Like, it's hilarious. It's such a good parody. This man, you know, with his boxing gloves, he's trying to, like, cook eggs and is, like, breaking the eggs on the pan, trying to do, like, a training montage, you know, lifting weights. But then one time he lifts, like, a bottle of Hennessy and drinks it. Like, it's – and you got to imagine, like, just picture this guy. He looks hilarious with this cheap black Justin Bieber wig. Like, it just looks funny. And we made it with three endings. I'm going back and forth here, but this is how, you know, I feel like it's an exciting story this way. So we filmed it with a Pacquiao win, a Pacquiao loss, and a Pacquiao draw. Now going back to this guy who did the same, we learned from this guy who did this, he did great Obama impressions and he was confident. Well, he's pretty sure Obama was going to win. So before that, a month before that, he filmed a Obama rap video. Amazing. He filmed it a month before, right when Obama became president, got elected. He put the video out, boom, went viral. And he, you know, he made a ton of, like, he just killed it. And he you know, he got popular from that. So that led to, he can also do Drake impressions. So that's one way to go viral. And he just made a career off of that. So we made those three videos right when this fight was over. We uploaded it, the loss video, and we just made like very small changes to it, you know, like so when he won, the video essentially ended. When he lost, he woke up and it was a draw. sorry, he woke up and he was like, oh, it was all a dream, and he has a black eye. So it's kind of spoiling the video, but you can still watch it. And then when we put that up, we went kind of viral. So what we never really thought it would – it never really got any – we never really did this. So 50,000 views within 24 hours. Huh. Then it died off, but I'd consider that viral.
Yeah. Like,
especially for us who averaged maybe 700 views per video. So that gave us the spark to keep going, some silly video, some parody video, and it just, you know, sometimes you need that push, man.
Yeah. So did you, were you guys concerned about like having the branding in the video at all, or just putting it on your channel?
Yeah, I mean, it's on the, yeah, it's not really a big deal. It's on the channel and it has Fantasy Couch, you know, subscribe at, the, he did like a little thing where he was like, this is Manny Pacquiao, you know, subscribe to Fantasy Couch. Cool. It's really irrelevant to the content and being, and that's another point I wanted to make. People think going viral, is that cool? Like Rebecca Black Friday.
Yeah.
What other songs does she have? Thursday, name another Wednesday. Song of hers. did you buy her album? Do you see her? Like, see, Charlie Bit My Finger. What's the kid's name? Like, what's the follow up to that? Like, there are like what's the dude's name? The Chocolate Rain. That's like the only one where the dude made a career out of it. Is he smart? But even he, I mean, that was really the big hit, and then they didn't really have many after that. But still made a living off of it. He does voices for like that Robot Chicken cartoon show or something. Okay. So you don't know that one, Chocolate Rain?
Yeah, no, I've seen that.
Okay, yeah, it's old. It's before YouTube ads. It's like back in the early days. So like going viral, guys, isn't that like these catchwords like, oh, $1 million. That like $1 million is great. Don't get me wrong, but it ain't what it seems sometimes. A lot of people that get $1 million that never had it before, they blow it, or they don't necessarily get more happy. It's just proven. It's just, this is how it happens. Going viral, getting a shout out. PewDiePie, the greatest YouTuber, shouted out like 10 channels one time. The biggest YouTuber. He shouted out 10 channels one time and all of them sucked except one. And that was Jacksepticeye. And he did, and PewDiePie says this, he has a big, he has a lot of subscribers. What is it now? 30 million? I don't know for Jacksepticeye. Because he was a good YouTuber. He's like, that day I shouted out other subscribers. They all got 5,000 subscribers within a day. They gained it. It was awesome. But that was it. And then they died off. So a lot of things, or working with the platinum artist, whatever, fill in the blank, is not quite how it seems. So going viral statistically, like to the brand, it didn't really do that much. We didn't gain that many subscribers from it, but people loved it. But what it really did to us, it got us, for us, it was good because we were going to shut down the whole brand that day. But we loved it so much. Dude, people watching the video telling us they were dying. They watched it 20 times over. They can't stop crying. And I was like, wow, people like the other ones, but this one got a way bigger reaction. So it gave us that spark, and we just kept going, and I just kept getting better and better as a host, and it just kept improving the channel. So that year we had 3,000 subs. Next year 6,000 subs. Then it was actually more, but this is how it went year by year. I don't know the exact year. So 3,000 subs, 6,000, 9,000. Around the time Pacquiao came out, we had probably around 6 to 9. 9,000. Then from 9,000, it just kept growing and growing. It went to 15,000, and now we're at 24,000, which isn't a huge channel, but today, right now, full-time job, making a living off doing fantasy football. Amazing.
It is amazing, man. And did you always view it as a business from the start?
Yeah. It wasn't really the conversation, but of course, like we always talked about making money off of it, this and that, but we didn't really know what we're doing through all these failures. And by the way, people that started around the same time, they quit. If they wasn't working out, they quit within 2 to 4 years. I counted it. Nobody lasted over 5 years unless they were like, there was a couple that was successful. Like FanDuel actually started the same time. And actually the co-founder actually hit us up because they were like itty bitty when they started at the same time. And of course they kept going, but all the ones that failed, they stopped. They didn't even try for 5 years. We went for what? Now it'll be 10 years. We went on, we just kept going, man.
So before you were full time, what were you doing to supplement your income? Like while you were working on this, and like, what were the hours like that you were putting into Fantasy Couch on top of your other work?
So the main stuff, like I said, was website design, logo design, graphics, video production, video commercials, video editing, just anything multimedia, or running social media campaigns, anything multimedia, social media, I knew. Because that's how I grew up. I always did that stuff, and I learned most of it on my own. So that's what I was doing. And then, you know, fortunate enough, I was at home. And, you know, we were just ordering food to get, you know, or getting food to go. And we were just in the lab. And I didn't need to commute or anything, so I was able to work a lot on both. And I put in a lot of hours to Fantasy Couch, but it was sporadic and it wasn't as consistent. Once I knew for sure, like, I am a YouTuber, this is what I want to do. And then I start, nowadays, I'm starting to put in a lot more hours. During football season, I put in average 14 hours a day to Fantasy Couch. Off season, yeah, I take some breaks. But like, I just edited this video and it took me 20 hours just to edit. And, you know, that's like you don't want to put it out. It was about the NFL drafts. Like, you don't want to put it out late. So like I took a nap and that was it. Just worked around the nap. Like, it was like, you got to get to work.
Jeez. So going off of that, can you talk about some of the struggles of being an entrepreneur? You know, it takes years and years to build it up.
Yeah. So I would say it's more mental. Cause like I have a friend, like, he thinks everything's always good. He always thinks he's the best, you know, he's always happy. But that's not me. Like, I'm way more real with myself. I know, like, when something sucks, you know, like, that's one of my, like, it's like a talent of mine. It's definitely a gift, but also it could be a curse a little bit. I'm just very not biased. I can look at something. I just look at a post I posted. I'll be like, that was whack. I did this whack. And obviously I'm going to be biased to some extent because it's my own work. Mm-hmm. But I'm the best I've seen at it, at just looking at some being like, that was whack. This video was whack. This is what I did wrong. Or I'll ask somebody, like, I know this video sucks. What did I do wrong? What was bad? The bad. Okay. So about being an entrepreneur. Yeah. So I think that was my main struggle, and I'll just go my personal experience. I was very worried about what people would think in the terms of me being a loser. I was just afraid to be a loser. I was afraid. That's why I chose business school. That's why I tried to do stuff that's normal. Okay, you should apply for a normal job, or, oh, you should do this. Or I was going to a lot of networking events, go to business networking events. I didn't even know how to tie a tie, and I never wore a blazer or anything. So I bought a blazer, and I, you know, my friend tied it, and I, you know, I put on this, like, cause I am charismatic to some extent, but I'm not a people's person, like in real life, you know, like one-on-one.
Yeah.
Or like in a, like, I can crush it on a podcast, on a video, as a host. I can crush it. I do a lot of presentations too, to a ton of people. I'd rather speak to 1,000 people in a presentation than one person.
Wow.
In Starbucks, who's giving me like this weird combo, like, ugh, dude, get away from me, like, I don't want to talk to you, like but 1,000 people, oh, I can crush it. And I love doing that. So I was afraid of not being normal, of being a loser, doing this childish thing. And you got to get over that. And sometimes, a lot of times, you're going to fail. Most of the time, you're going to fail at something. Maybe it's something else. And another thing, you can always, it's okay to be the number two guy. It's okay to be the number six guy of a winning team. You don't always have to be the leader. You don't always have to be the main rapper. You know, you don't have to be Eminem. You could be like, who is the guy, RIP Proof, you know, you could be his hype man. Mm-hmm. You could do anything, guys. Like, you don't have to always be the number one guy. It doesn't have to be this niche. It doesn't have to be music. Or if it's music, you can all, like, that's, music sucks. Like, you can't, in the industry sucks. That's why they're being actors or businessmen. Like, why do you think all these people, rappers are coming out with their vodka or tequila or something, or acting? Cause there's not a lot of album sales out there. I mean, shows, you make money off shows, but you got to do the biggest shows. Hopefully that made sense.
No, it definitely makes sense. And when did that kind of fade away? Like, the thoughts of, you know, the doubt.
Good question.
Like that.
And different for me than going to be for everyone else. But guys, it's such a weird thing. It's like almost silly, but it's a fact, and this is going to work for anybody. We had 9,800 subscribers on YouTube, right? It's cool. Like, I know it can work. And then when that number changed to the 10K, like, it summed it up and said 10K, everyone started talking to me differently. I was now like some entity that I wasn't like, hey, bro, like, good video. Like, that's how people would talk to me. Now it was like, these guys don't know what they're talking about, or these guys are awesome. They deserve more. So, like, and the companies approached me. So, I, you know, you may think that's a little, but the ways I got brand deals, brands also approached me differently too. The emails were like, wow, we're really lucky if we can get this influencer on our team. I'm like, oh, but you guys weren't lucky when we had 9K, but 10K. It's like, hey, these guys, you know, they're on their way to become a large YouTube channel. Because I guess you could say 10 to 50K is medium, and then 100K is huge. Yeah. And a million is the key, but you got, I mean, realistically, in niches, nobody has a million in most niches, like a niche, like helping people on podcasting or helping people, like it's pretty rare, or like fantasy football, such a small niche. 100K to us is like the million to a normal channel. So that was actually the turning point. Once that happened and the growth just started coming in from there, it's just a mental thing, not for me, but for everyone that views it. They're like, 9K channel, these guys are, you know, they're just some guys, you know, doing this. 10K is like, wow, they're big. You know, it's just that that mental thing, that perception that people see. And once they saw that, I just like, hey, I got to step up my game too. I always thought out, because I was a graphic designer, man, I always thought my thumbnails were so dope because I do professional graphic design. I had to relearn. This is one of the rare times where I really had to check myself and say, dude, your thumbnails aren't that good. Thumbnails are so important because it's a different game. Yeah. It wasn't that I didn't know how to use Photoshop to make them. Like, I did photography full time, Photoshop full time, video. Like, I knew it. I just had to relearn. I had to check myself, say, bro, this is a different game and you suck. And to this day, like, just the last one I did, I kept improving. Like, I got to keep improving my thumbnails, keep trying stuff different, doing little things to try to make them better. Keep learning. Now, you got to, yeah, sometimes, you got to check your ego, man. And I bet it happens a lot to older people who are used to traditional things. And now that I'm in my 30s, you know, it can start happening to me. Always got to check yourself.
And you mentioned how people started taking you a lot more serious at 10,000 subscribers. Before that, were you like soliciting these brands, trying to get these deals, and then all of a sudden it flip-flopped to where they're hitting you up?
A little bit. Like, we didn't put a lot of effort in that. To try to get, because that's like a full-time job in itself.
Yeah.
Sales, essentially, adding people on LinkedIn, messaging them and taking a photo, like, you know, I punted that. That's not my strength. Like, yeah. I said, networking and stuff. So we tried that a little bit, but not really. But yeah, at the same time, all them came to us and we had to actually decline about 3 lucrative deals this past one. What was so cool is that my favorite brands, or like the opportunities that were so cool, approached us, like a Pro Football Focus. I love them. I use them. Everyone does. CBS, they talk about their grading system, and they approach me and I'm like, wow, I'm so grateful.
So you were mainly concerned with, you know, building that following, getting that loyalty, and then the business stuff can come later, pretty much.
Yeah, and that's how it goes. So right now, I mean, we just had a discussion like this a day or two ago with my buddy Mike. I'm like, look, this is what my main focus is. Massive growth, especially specifically on the main YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna just attack that. Just try to get growth on that. Like, we've always had a big following on Twitter and stuff. So we got over 100,000 total followers. But people, especially brands, especially us, who's like really YouTube's our main thing, they really cared about that YouTube numbers. We got like 50,000 on Twitter. Nobody cares though.
Huh. So yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. I'm not sure. I mean, this is a lot more selfish from me because I'm trying to do something similar. But how did you manage to build that social media following? Like, did you attack one platform at a time? Like, was YouTube always the main thing? Or,
well, be more specific. Like, you just mean over, like, the whole thing overall?
Yeah, like Twitter, or platforms. Like, did you focus on one at a time and building up that following, like Twitter and Facebook, or did you do all of them at once?
See, here's, I think, what your approach is too analytical. You're like asking, let's use baseball as an analogy. I don't watch much baseball, but you're kind of asking like statistics about baseball when the real thing is always be first, rush up there with your bat, don't take any practice swings, and try to crush the heck out of that baseball. Okay. So always be first on a platform. Don't be afraid to fail and go hard. You see what I mean? There is no strategy. So let me give you an example. So this, when we first started, it was MySpace, right? MySpace was still like, it was dying, but it was still like somewhat relevant. And so I was on Twitter personally. I was cracking jokes. I had like 700 followers, like, which is kind of cool for when it first started. And I got the Twitter culture, but we said, let's hop on Twitter. We don't know what we're going to post there. We had no idea, because like social media management wasn't even a thing. There was not a job back then, 2009. So we hopped on Twitter. We got the account. We reserved it. So reserve all your accounts. That's a good, like, I guess, a technical aspect. Look at the accounts and reserve. So we reserved like 100 accounts. So whatever there was, I don't know, like a site like popcorn.com. I don't even know what that social media is. I just threw that out there. So I would get /fantasycouch. Reserve all your domains, your ads, your account names, put your profile pic, your bio, your URL there. So first to hop on Twitter, one guy just asked, he said, this player or that player? And I was like, what does this guy mean? I didn't understand. So he meant, who do I start on Sunday, player A or player B? It's fantasy football. I was like, oh, that's what you meant. Little did I know that 90%, like thousands and thousands of tweets, like sometimes I get 1,000 questions in 1 week. Sometimes I got 1,000 questions within on a weekend. They're just asking, do I start this guy or that guy? And that's where it came. You always got to be first. And then a lot of people copied me. Mm-hmm. Instagram, same thing. Like, what are we going to post? Like, I think the first post was our baseball editor. He took a picture of me that was cringy and said, this is our CEO hard at work. But I wasn't hard at work. And it was like, I don't know what the heck. Like, because you don't know what to post. Yeah. When Instagram first. This is like before. This is like early, early days Instagram. I was one of the first to die. I made my whole crew hop on Instagram. They're like, that's for girl. Whatever. So they say, I'm like, get on it. I'm like, hop on this right now. And so we didn't know what it would come down to nowadays. Like, they took it to the next level. Like, people are doing way more than me. And Instagram keeps evolving. So, what's cool is like about two people that have bigger fantasy accounts than me on Instagram shouted me out just because I'm an OG. They're like, dude, the one guy said, you're the reason I hopped on this. I was like, what? Hmm. I was like, you're bigger than me now. Because I was the first fantasy football account on Instagram. And I don't like – some people actually say that exact sentence and they're lying. And I never really say that sentence, but I'm just telling you for the – like, I'm not showing off. Like, I'm trying to help you. That's, you know, that's the truth. Yeah. I was the first. I don't deserve a medal for being the first. Like, that alone isn't an achievement. But like I said, baseball analogy. Don't twist my words. Like, don't take it the wrong way. Just run up to the plate. Don't take any practice swings and try to crush the ball and try to hit it out the park every time. Gary V talks about how he's trying to master Vine, you know, this thing for 13-year-olds and teenagers and 19-year-olds, and is just so silly and stupid. Mastered the Vine game. Vine died. He failed. Like, he wasted all his time. But you never know. It could have been a home run. Then Musical.ly came out. Then now that died. And now what's it? You're probably not young enough to even know the new one. TikTok. Yeah. That's the new one. TikTok's the new one. It's for like kids. But it's like, you got to just not be afraid. Periscope, I signed up for it. I didn't even do anything on there, man. And it kind of, it didn't, you know, luckily nothing happened with it. So you just got to, and there was a bunch of like, there's a LOELLO.com. You never heard of that. Boom. I was the first on there too. It died right away. Like, you just, Pinterest, we hopped on, we stopped doing Pinterest, but Pinterest is 90% female audience. So we hopped on. We're the first fantasy football site on Pinterest, or maybe the second. Like, there was just really no football content really on there, period. So we just hopped on there. So that's like one of them. You got to do it. You got to attack and you got to go hard because things change. If I gave you an advice right now, dude, to get a bunch of followers in 6 months, that would change because they'll be like, oh, we don't use this type of system anymore, or that doesn't work, or we've curbed that. The algorithms change. It's a totally different game. Like, let me give you a good example. So I had to film this annoying rapper. My God, he was so annoying. He was always on drugs and he wanted me to film his shows. And he would show, he would be, you know, like typical, like stereotype rapper showing off Not even saying all rappers are like that, but what kind of like the bad stereotype some rappers get. So he's cocky, showing off on camera. I'm listening to him, how he's number one selling in Australia and this and that. I figured out how he did it because another one of my friends called me and told me how he did it. So back in the day on iTunes and YouTube, if you just typed in on the tags, you know what tags are, right?
Yeah.
On tags. So for those of you that don't know, tags are just like almost like hashtags for Instagram. They're just tags you use for search engine optimization for SEO to help find your content. So he would put Eminem, Lil Wayne, et cetera, et cetera, on all his iTunes songs and all his YouTube videos. And back in the day, that would work. I know it's stupid now, but that would work. And he really did sell a ton. He made a ton of money, and he's not that good. He made a ton of money off these songs. It had nothing to do with Eminem or Lil Wayne. But when people type Lil Wayne and he pops up number six, that's a lot. When Lil Wayne was like at his most popular, yeah, that's going to get a ton of views. And even if 99% of people think it's crap, it's still going to get a lot of sales. So that, you know, that was his technique back then, aka cheating, you know, whatever you want to call it. I don't care. I don't have any like emotion towards it. This is what's up now. It don't work now though. That's the point.
One last question before we wrap this up. What would you say is your biggest piece of advice for people out there who are building something, pursuing a dream, and trying to build something bigger than themselves?
You're going to do it or you're not. I mean, there's just really nothing to it. Like, there's a bunch of specifics that come to it, but I mean, are you going to do it? Or are you going to talk about it? And are you going to do it? Don't be afraid to fail, because usually number seven or number nine attempt is where you succeed. Cliche, right when we're about to quit, you know, like it literally came down to like, we're about to quit, guys. Like, it was about it. Was when you're right about to quit, sometimes is when the opportunity comes. And opportunities, I got to tell this last, we're going to have to go a little longer. I have to tell this. You got to believe, guys. This is the right answer for you. And it's a long one, but you have to believe. That's the right answer to the question. So what I just said before, that was all, that was okay, but you have to believe. Just because you believe doesn't mean it's going to come true. Sorry to break it to you guys. Because you believe, it's still probably not going to come true. What I'll tell you this, what's going to happen. If you don't believe, you have a 0% chance for it to come true. So if you don't walk up to the plate and you don't swing hard, you're there's a 0% chance you're going to crush that ball and hit a home run. It's 0% chance. Guaranteed. Mike called me one day and I was telling him, hey, bro, I'm getting some business cards printed out. And we got the business card we got printed out was in the shape of a couch, fantasy couch, you know, to stand out.
Yeah.
Because this was back when I thought, you know, I'm going to network and talk. I'm going to be a people's person. You know, it was a mistake. But hey, you know, I'm not mad at it for that. I learned that I wasn't a people's person. I didn't know that. I learned that was like, I can do it. Like, you know, I was good at it, but I hated it. It was like not like I just wanted to run away. So I was like, dude, carry these business cards with you. You work at Silicon Valley. You never know who you're going to meet. I was like, you can meet Mark Zuckerberg one day. And he laughed. He's like, no way. I was like, you don't know, bro. You can meet him. Just, you know, not too much later, he's taking a tour at Facebook because his friend's dad works there. And Mark Zuckerberg starts walking up. And just like a unicorn, you know, just imagine, you know, he's just like a regular looking dude.
Yeah.
And the friend's, the co-worker's dad says, hey, Mark. And this dude had the balls. I mean, he was like a dream. Like, you know, he wasn't thinking. He was just going off of fumes. Like, he was just like, you know, like it was all like he just kind of blacked out. But he's like, I got to do this. This dude said, hey, Mark, I'm a huge fan. I started this startup. This dude took out the business card and gave it to him. And this story now means like the business card, like he probably threw it away. We like talk about when he like it was within hours or within days. Like he threw that away. Nothing happened. And that wasn't the right approach we want with the company. But still, that was a great story, man, to tell, because he believed. When I told him that, he said, all right, maybe there's a chance. I guarantee if he was like, this guy's stupid, and he could have forgot his business cards at home. He always carried it on him every day, and he did that. Funny thing is, he met him again too randomly a second time. So that happened, right? Another story. We're walking up to I don't even know the name of the league. You know how they come up with these football leagues and they always die. Yeah. But there was a league, and there was a Sacramento Mountain Lions, and it was Dante Culpepper was the quarterback, the Vikings quarterback. And, like, one of these old Colts players, a Colts running back, was it Dominic Rhodes or – not a die, but one of the Colts running backs was on the team. And we're getting free tickets. Everyone's hyped because it's, like, the kickoff of the seat of the league that, you know, eventually died. And so we're walking in the parking lot, and I don't recognize faces, but we're walking with four people – four of us total, and Dio in our group, he says, "Man, that's Tyreek Evans. I think that's Tyreek. That's Tyreek Evans." And I was like, "What?" I was like, "For real?" And they're like, "Yeah, that's him. That's Tyreek Evans, NBA Rookie of the Year 2011." And then Drew says, our baseball editor, he says, "Man, you should approach him. Ask him for an autograph." And I said, "You know what? That's kind of like, I don't like that fanboy stuff." Like, I was like, "Nah, I don't really feel that." Look, if you're a kid, like, that's totally cool. Or for your kid to get signed autograph stuff and talk, like, that's totally cool. Like, for kids, that's cool. But for grown men, I'm not really like, I'm just not crazy for it.
Yeah.
Like, that's just me personally. So, you know, do you guys, but that's why I'm just kind of painting the picture why I answered. I was like, "Nah, man, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to bother him." I was like, "You never know. One day we could just be chilling man to man, you know, just having a normal conversation." And fast forward a few years later, I'm at Tyreek Evans' house. He has a couch, not like our couch, but he has a couch, and he has this freaky bobblehead. That's like, just imagine a bobblehead that's like worth $1,000. It's like way bigger. It looks just like Tyreek Evans. He has a gap in his teeth, and whoever did this is a really good artist. And I'm interviewing this doll. Like, as a joke, you know, like the Penny Hardaway Sprite commercials from way back in the day that with Chris Rock voiced him. It's funny because Chris Rock is like, he's like loud, obnoxious, like funny, like a, you know, like charismatic people's person. But Tyreek is super shy. And so his brother is kind of like that. He's like more louder, more energetic. So his brother's voicing the doll. And we're waiting for Tyreek Evans to come back from a date. He went to like a Benihana's. And so, we're waiting, and then I'm interviewing this doll. It's so freaky to look at because it looks like him. And then, like, next scene, we edit it together. Like, oh, the real Tyreek Evans. Now I'm interviewing the real Tyreek Evans, Rookie of the Year. It was the NBA holdout that year, and his home team was the Steelers. So we're talking about the Steelers and stuff. And it's just cool, man, to see stuff like that. A bunch of other, just to sum it up, like what I work with my idol, John Madden. I filmed for his charity 5 years in a row out here. I met Steve Mariucci, one of my favorite coaches. He coached the 49ers and other teams, has a Super Bowl win with Steve Young. Met ton of players, ton of football players, basketball players, worked with the Niners, Warriors, San Jose Sharks, Oakland A's, San Francisco Giants. John Madden was the biggest. That was like, you know, first time that's one of the only times I was like super like celebrity struck. Like, I was like, "No way, dude." I was like, "John Madden?" I was like, "Well, that's like my number one like idol celebrity." Just insane. You know, other platinum artists, Mike met Jack Dorsey, CEO of Twitter, a ton of other DJs and models and whatnot. And it's just like, we did this with no money. There's no excuses. I'm just a dude from Vallejo who everyone thought was like loser nerd, like not going to make, like nobody would think like this. And, another thing, like I can read and write, like, but I have super ADD. I have OCD. I have a lot of issues. It's hard for me to read more than 2 minutes. But I sat down with the help of my friend, and he coached me through it. He's an author coach and a course coach. He helped me make an online course and write a book. And because of his help, it went and the great support I had, it became bestseller on Amazon, How to Play Fantasy Football. So, I mean, if I can achieve these goals, and I'm not a millionaire now, but, you know, I'm on the way to getting bigger. And I made this a full-time job just the past 2 years. and I couldn't be happier, man. Living the dream, but I still got a lot of goals. Like, we're just talking about goals and keep growing. Yesterday and the day before. So if you're an underdog, you don't have the money, or you're this and that, whatever. Is that an excuse, or is that a chip on your shoulder to go achieve? Because I talked to a lot of these players that got a chip on their shoulder, man. Trust me, and they go out there and achieve. They don't play excuses.
That's awesome advice, dude. And really appreciate you coming on, sharing your story. Obviously, you've done a lot of impressive stuff. Impressive to me, and definitely going to be really helpful to our listeners. So just thanks again for coming on, and looking forward to keeping in touch.
Yeah, man. Check me out. Just type in Fantasy Couch and check me out on whatever you guys want. YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, pretty much everywhere. Hussein the Brain for Fantasy Couch.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, or if you learned something new, smash that subscribe button and leave us a quick review. Hustle and Motivate is presented by JokerMag.com, the home of the underdog.